Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, host of the Football History Dude podcast, right here on the Sports History Network. Now, before we jump into another sports history adventure, let me tell you about this episode's sponsor. We partnered with Rochester Sports Autographs, the largest JSA authenticated autograph distributor in the United States, where you can get deals on over 30,000 autographed sports collectibles. They even have film, music, and other entertainment autographs on the site, so there's something for everyone. Perhaps you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, or maybe Father's Day. Heck, who needs a holiday as an excuse to give a piece of sports history to your loved ones? Or how about yourself? Today seems like a great day to add to your sports cave, right? But how is RSA able to offer such great deals on JSA authentication, you ask? Well, they do this by making deals directly with athletes, so there are no extra markups, and they choose to pass these savings on to the customer. All orders from Rochester Sports Autographs are top quality and shipped to your door with top authentication and money-back guarantee. And to make sure RSA knows that the Sports History Network sent you, we created a special link for you. All you have to do is head to shoprsa.com/SHN. Again, that's shoprsa.com/SHN. Head over there to get your piece of sports history today.
If you like some good old-time football, this is the podcast for you in this episode, because we're going to go back to the 1880s at a rules convention and talk about the great James Naismith. Yes, the guy that invented basketball and what his contributions were to football, and some old Chicago Bears footage coming up. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. I hope all's well going for you, and we're in the middle of this football season. But we're going to go back in history and go back to the football history headlines for the date of October 17th. And we're going to start off in 1883 in New York City on the 17th of October at a rules convention meeting that discussed point totals for different scoring plays, including making a safety was going to be worth 1 point in the 1883 season. A touchdown would be worth 2 points, and a goal following a touchdown would equal 4 points. The goal for a field goal, 5 points. Big emphasis on the kicking game in early football, just like it was in rugby and soccer. Also, the position of referee is established to monitor play to keep a level playing field. Next, let's jump forward to October 17th, 1891, and we'll go to Springfield, Massachusetts, and we'll talk about James Naismith. Yes, the same guy that invented the game of basketball. And he wears what's considered the first time a football head covering is worn in a game. After suffering cauliflower ear by playing center for Springfield College, Massachusetts, then called the Young Men's Christian Training School against Powerhouse Yale on October 14, 1891, James was headlocked and smacked on the side of the head quite a bit in the brutal game of the line play of the era by the Bulldog players, and Naismith was fitted with pieces of flannel for that next game to cover and protect his ears by his girlfriend, future wife Maud. The game against Amherst on October 17, 1891 was that next game after the Yale, and it's the probable game that head covering was first worn, as it was Springfield's next game following the Yale contest that season. So, James Naismith possibly could be considered one of the first people to wear a headpiece in the game of American football, besides inventing the game of basketball. Quite an important man in sports history. Next, let's go to a big one on the timeline. October 17th, 1920, in Decatur, Illinois, the Decatur Staleys, who later became the Chicago Bears, played in their very first game against an opponent of the APFA, which later became the NFL, the Rock Island Independents. So the first time the Chicago Bears played another NFL team in what was considered the NFL at the time, the APFA. per the Pro Football Reference website, the Staley's team featured the legendary stars of Jimmy Konselman, who we talked about a day or two ago, Patty Driscoll, and George Halas. Papa Bear, yeah, was a player in that game. And the Decatur squad won the game over Rock Island by the score of 7-0. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, to not only see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskin Dispatch is in the social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Pigskin Dispatch is also happy to be associated with the Sports History Network, the sports headquarters of yesteryear, found at sportshistorynetwork.com. Okay, it's time to pay homage to our legends of the game and Hall of Famers who have birthdays on October 17th. And we're going to start in the year 1918, October 17th in Detroit, Michigan, and Ralph C. Wilson Jr. was born into this world. Ralph Wilson is best known for being the owner and founder of the Buffalo Bills franchise. Mr. Wilson started his ownership journey, though, by being a minority owner in the Detroit Lions franchise. Mr. Wilson then sold out of his Lions contract and became one of the original founders of the AFL in 1960 and had a big part in the AFL-NFL merger in the late 1960s. His Buffalo Bills were actually created in 1959. In the AFL, Ralph Wilson watched as his team won the AFL championship in 1964 and again in 1965, according to ProFootballHOF.com. He also saw the Bills make it into an unprecedented 4 consecutive appearances in the Super Bowls, Super Bowl 25, 26, 27, and 28. Ralph has gone down in history as being the third on a list of longevity for NFL owners, as his 53 years with the Bills was only surpassed by George Halas's 63-year seasons with the Bears and Art Rooney Sr.'s 55 seasons with the Steelers. Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Ralph Wilson Jr. into the Great Building of Legends in year 2009. At the enshrinement ceremony, Wilson had one of the most memorable Hall of Fame speeches ever when he said, "It should take much calculating to decide whether to pay $5 or $50,000 for a seat at a football game. I had just this choice a few years back, and on contrary to what you might expect of the sane man, I chose the higher price seat. It wasn't that I was interested in the view, but the $50,000 entitled me to any seat in the house. I had finally become what I had long wanted to be, the sole owner of a pro football team." Ralph Wilson Jr., October 17th, 1918. Happy birthday, Mr. Wilson. Now we jump forward to October 17th, 1946, Mount Morris, Michigan. That's when Herb Orvis, a defensive tackle for the University of Colorado, was born. With the Buffaloes, Orvis was a 1971 first-team All-American and twice earned first-team All-Big Eight honors. Per a great bio of Mr. Orvis on footballfoundation.org, we learned that he led the Buffs to 3 consecutive bowl games, wins in the 1969 Liberty Bowl, the 71 Blue Bonnet Bowl, and the number 3 ranking in the 1971 season. Herb was a large player for his era, standing at 6'5" and weighing in at approximately 235 pounds. And he has a ferocity that terrorized opponents his entire college career. The National Football Foundation selected Herb Orvis to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2016. After graduation, Orvis became the 16th overall pick by the Detroit Lions in the 1972 NFL Draft. Herb played for the Lions from 1972 through 1977, then with the Baltimore Colts for 4 additional seasons. Orvis received second-team All-NFC honors in the year 1975. Our next stop on the timeline, we go to Detroit, Michigan on October 17th, 1947, and Ron Johnson, a University of Michigan running back, came into this world. How good was Ron Johnson? Well, his Michigan teammates voted him as MVP of the team twice, and they also selected him as one of their captains for the 1968 season. Mr. Johnson was the first African-American in Wolverine history to serve as a team captain. Ron was an outstanding student at the university, too, as he earned awards such as the Big Ten Medal of Honor for his hard work on the field and in the classroom. As a runner, he was dynamite, exemplified in a game against Wisconsin in the 68 season, as Johnson pounded out 347 yards on the ground, which stood as an NCAA record for 3 years and remains a Michigan record per the National Football Foundation's bio on the great player. After college, Ron Johnson was picked in the first round by the Cleveland Browns in the 1969 NFL Draft. He stayed with the Browns for one season before playing with the New York Giants from 1970 through 1975. In New York, he twice earned All-Pro honors in 1970 and 1972, and he became the first player in Giants history to gain at least 1,000 yards rushing in a season, twice hitting the milestone. Ron Johnson entered into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1992. Our final October 17th history headline takes us to Houston, Texas in 1957, and Steve McMichael, a top-notch defensive end, was born. Steve played his college football at the University of Texas and was selected as a unanimous first-team All-American after the 1979 season. As a footballfoundation.org website describes, Steve graduated as the school's all-time leader in tackles with 369 and had 30 sacks. He was a finalist for the Lombardi and the Outland Awards in 1979 and became the Hula Bowl's most valuable player that season. The National Football Foundation selected Steve McMichael into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2009. Steve was drafted into the NFL after college by the New England Patriots in the third round of the 1980 draft. The next year, Chicago picked him up as a free agent, and he spent 13 fruitful seasons with the Bears, including a victory in Super Bowl XX with one of the most feared defenses in the NFL, the 85 Chicago Bears. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, the host of When Football Was Football, here on the Sports History Network. I'm very pleased to announce that I will be partnering with the Sports History Network to give away two copies of my latest book called Bears vs. Cardinals, the NFL's Oldest Rivalry. To enter, just head over to the following link, sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. We hope you'll enjoy the numerous stories in the book, which is largely based on the newly released Dutch Sternemann collection at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Dutch was the co-owner of the early Chicago Bears with George Halas and kept correspondence, financial records, and scouting reports, which now allow us to peek into the management of an NFL club during the first few years of the league's existence. Along the way, we'll meet unusual gridiron characters from years gone by, including a quarterback who could throw the ball farther behind his back than he could throwing it forward, a Bears lineman who was such a good tavern fighter that he decided to enter the boxing universe, and a Cardinals halfback who gave up the NFL rushing title by deciding to not show up for his team's final game of the season. And can we forget the time the Al Capone mob interrupted a Bears-Cardinals game? The new book was fun to research, and I hope you'll enter our free contest today. Once the winners are selected, we'll be in touch regarding shipping as well as to inscribe the book personally for you. This might make a perfect gift for Mother's or Father's Day, or simply add it to your own personal collection. Once again, enter by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you, and good luck!